Welcome to Booked, the programme that jives and jitterbugs around the stately dance floor of literature. Take your partners for a book-based dance with a hint of danger, dash of romance, to stimulate your vest and stir your pants. And our panellists today, the regulars, Miles Kington, a man who plays with words like a coarse fisherman plays with a chub, and Dilly Keane, a woman who lines words up like tin cans and shoots them down. Bang, bang. And competing for a chapter heading in the big book of life, Roger McGough, a man who sneaks up behind words and changes their shape when nobody's looking, and Mark Thomas, a man who plays words like a fine Stradivarius banjo. Now we're in the orchard, let's pick the plums. Each panellist will find a pack of cards in front of them. Each card has written upon it the name of a literary animal, like Old MacDonald's free-range, organically grown, non-competitive marmalade. Except that's not an animal. All you have to do is describe what's on the card without using real names so the others guess it. You can only pass on one, and you've only got a minute, so Roger and Mark, on your bikes, ready, steady, pedally.
Little furry animal, blind, burrows underground.
Mole.
Yes.
Moley. This is an Egyptian woman in charge of the place, had a snake.
In charge of what?
In charge of Egypt. She's in charge of Egypt. She had a snake. It bit her on the bosom.
Cleopatra.
Lovely.
Yes, this is a little thing that swims, furry creature again, swims in the water.
It's a rat. It's a water rat.
It's nicer than that.
It's furry and it swims in the water.
It's not a rotter.
It's not a rotter. Otter.
It's an otter, yes.
Lovely. It's an otter, right, excellent.
Indian otter. Oh,
yeah,
Tiger the otter.
Tiger. I'll have a Tiger Dale otter. But this was, this is a friend of a bear that likes honey and is small.
Oh, little,
yeah, it's pink.
No,
this is the friend of the bear that likes honey.
Sorry, yes, the donkey.
No. The pink friend. The little tiny one.
15 seconds.
No. Friend of Winnie. His best mates with Winnie.
I'll have to hurry.
I'll pass.
Roger and Mark, sorry. You got 4 points. Miles and Dilly, on your mics. Ready, steady, talk.
It's an animal, furry animal. Not a hare, but smaller.
A rabbit?
Yes.
Little grey rabbit?
Yes.
This is another of the same variety, and his father ended up in Mr. McGregor's pie.
Oh, God, Peter. Oh.
Yes. Peter Rabbit.
Peter Rabbit. Horse. Not white at all.
Black Beauty.
Yes.
This was a very magnificent beast, an allegory for Jesus, in a book by C.S. Lewis. And he was in woman with a pointy hat,
God,
and
lion,
something that you hang your clothes in. Yes, the lion. Well done.
Moley, Ratty, and all those people. Wild woods. What are the animals in the wild woods?
Foreign. I don't know.
nasty little bitey animal. Long teeth.
Long teeth. Rats.
No. The long thin, they snake across
the road. Hyenas. Snakes.
Pass.
He got shot in the ice was here, the ice was there, the ice was all around.
Albatross.
Yes.
The pussycat took him along.
Owl.
Yes.
That's it. That's the end, and you got 6 points.
Ian, can I just say, it was Piglet, the one that Roger and I were struggling with.
Ours was weasels, apparently.
Did weasel in the wildwood.
Because when you said, they're all in there, and you said, they're foreign. They're rabid, they've come over on the tunnel.
Yes.
And now, for the final time this series, I wipe away a literary tear. Beginnings and endings. Our gang of four go barmy with top and tails and come up with appropriate beginnings and endings, parodying a writer or a book. Roger, we gave you Finnegan's Wake.
You did, thank you very much for that, Ian.
Well, it took James Joyce 17 years to write, written in many different styles and languages. Joyce attempted to include all human life, so Roger.
Here we go. This is the beginning. River run, river run, I feel a poem coming on. A sonnet, perhaps, or something longer. I feel the current growing stronger. The words take me by the hand, lead me to a far-off land. This poem's starting to expand. A short story, perhaps. The muse has planned, or a novella. Ah, wouldn't that be grand? Finnegan's Wake by James Joyce. I'll be finished by closing time. Ah, sure, wouldn't that be nice? And it wasn't. It was 16 years later. Finnegan's Wake at the end. Un, deux, trois, quatre, cinq. Wonders never cease, set in me ways. On and on and on. For 628 blading pages. It rages for ages and ages. I've been in writing and a punning and a running. The words together up to me ears and language of 17 years. Day in, day out, deo gratias. No word left unturned, no pun left unintended. World without ended, an allegorical comical stream of conscientiousness. And thank God I'm running out of paper. Just a few more lines, then I'll be able to do all them things I've not been able to do since 1922. Like going for a walk, going to the toilet. And last but not least, a bit of humpity-tumpity with the missus. Can't wait. Wish a gull, gulls, for calls, use them. Fin again, till thousands the lips, the key to come, given away alone, at last, I loved along the...
Miles, we gave you 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel García Márquez. A Magic Lilith novel.
Right.
Tell us about it.
We've got 100 years to get through, so let's go. The first year was not too bad. I was not entirely alone, as I had a housekeeper called Conchita, who came in once a month to see if he'd left anything behind on the previous visit. In the second year, I was more alone, as Conchita no longer came, and I had to make my own bed. In the third year, I started talking to myself a lot more, and also got a postcard from Conchita. In it, she wrote, "Senor, you probably remember me as your housekeeper, Conchita, though I was, in fact, your long-lost cousin, Margarita." During the fourth year of solitude, I put the postcard from Conchita up on the mantelpiece and occasionally read it. That was the year the gypsies came and burgled the house. They took many valuable things but left the postcard behind. I was glad of that, as I decided to start stamp collecting and wanted to use her stamp as a starting point. This is the end. In the 99th year of solitude, I still met nobody. I occasionally went to international philately exhibitions, spoke to nobody while I was there. I gave up making my bed altogether and moved into a sleeping bag. I got another postcard from Conchita, making it the second in less than 100 years. She said she was well, but now very old. She hoped I'd kept the stamp from the first postcard, as it would now be very valuable. She said also, "Do you remember the last time I wrote I said I was your long-lost cousin Margarita? I now found I was wrong about this. I realise I'm, in fact, your mother. I hope you're wrapping up well now the cold weather's arrived. P.S. Write and tell me if you want my address." The end.
Mark, your book was The Selfish Giant by Oscar Wilde, who described it as a book for childlike people from 18 to 80. It tells how a giant prohibits children from playing in his garden, which turns the weather into a permanent winter until the children sneak back in.
It's an absolutely beautiful story, and it's a real shame to do this to it, really. Once upon a time, there lived a very selfish literary giant called Martin Amis. He would stamp around his walled garden shouting, "Fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell an advance of a five-figure sum." And lo and behold, he could. People would turn up and offer him huge piles of money. And in return, as a special, special favour, he gave them huge piles of old rope. So self-important was the literary giant that he banished all his friends from his garden and forbade them to play with him any more. And they all thought him to be less than pleasant. In fact, he was less pleasant than a Chinese burn on the willy. And the last line. So all Martin Amis's friends had a huge party to which he was not invited, and they called this party the Booker Prize. But the selfish literary giant was so determined, just even to get a glimpse over the wall, that he had to go and buy a pile of his own hardbacks to stand on. Fortunately, there were quite a lot of them left in the shop, and they only cost a fiver.
If there's a libel suit, we'll all stand by.
Dilly, you've got Riders by Jilly Cooper, a story of white bottoms in jodhpurs, sex, riding whips, hooray Henrys, show and sex jumping. Tell us what you've done, Dilly.
Well, it's more or less that, so shall we rather to read it? Okay.
I say, Nigel's just been sick all over the Land Rover, shrieked Lucinda in a voice that could be heard over five counties. Gosh, surely he's a bit early, even for Burley, replied Camilla, her enormous wazzocks wobbling alluringly as she slipped from the passenger seat. She sighed despairingly at the drunken figure slumped on the back seat. There'd be no rolling in the hay with Nigel Cardigan Fitzbadley today, that was certain. Some yards away, Charlie Longpole glanced over at the sensational blonde woman, feasting his eyes momentarily on her mammoth mazumas. Six-foot six in his riding boots, taut buttocks, clinched beneath his fawn jodhpurs, stock carefully tied round his neck, the riding hat making him look even taller. He looked every inch a bounder and a gentleman. gentleman. He was, in fact, the enormous member for Cheltenham North West, taking in a little bit of three-day eventing, and he certainly didn't use a gay for blondes. However, as the breathtakingly beautiful girl swung her golden mane over her shoulders and carefully rearranged the puffy black velvet hairband that encircled her head like a satanic halo, he felt something stir inside him. Longpole turned to his companion, Lord Bumchum. Who's the spiffing tossie with a corking pair of bristles? Bumchum gazed at him in amazement through his grandfather's monocle. Good God, don't you know who she is? That's the old Cardigan Fitzbadley's popsy. That's Camilla Park and Ride. And it ends some 28 years later. Longer even than Finnegan's Wake. Oh, Charlie, said Cam. Gosh, Caminix, said Charlie. You're awfully good fun. Ickle Wickle Popkins wants some rumpy pumpy with the best bunny chops with a wobbling, wobbly, wobbly front bumps, said Charlie tenderly. Somewhere in the distance, Tiggy honked loudly. Her animal noises were guaranteed to keep the... Somewhere in the distance, Tiggy honked loudly. Her animal noises were guaranteed to keep the kids delighted for yonks. Good old Tiggy, she thought vaguely, thanking God for the distraction. And Bunny Chops loves them, Charlie's touchy watchy woo. Oh, but she could say no more. She was carried away on a tide of rapture, so intense that she could only see the stars and feel a deep joy burning in her heart. This truly was heaven. Now you can understand why I don't want the class system to go away.
It's fantastic. It's like listening to Porn Red by Lloyd Grossman.
I'm wrung dry. Oh. We're only halfway through.
Right, sound effects round now. You know what happened when the percussionist died? Yes, he left sound effects. And here they are. We're going to play them all to you, so listen up and down and across, because all the sounds are important. Roger and Mark, this is the whole story.
Morning, Mom.
Aha!
I do.
Morning, Mom.
I do again.
I've got two weddings.
A lot of sheep.
A lot of shapes, some whipping, some beating, some shooting.
Right.
Life in Ambridge.
So she said, I do again. So the same lady got married twice.
Yeah. And a bit of sword fighting there.
Was there?
Some sword fighting.
Ah, that makes it clear.
Dilly Miles?
Far from the madding crowd.
It is. Miles and Dilly, here's one for you. This is a book title and a scene from the story and a further clue, the music's important.
Panis Angelicus, César Franck.
César Franck? Do you know that's the one composer they dread announcing in Radio 3? When they have to say this is the César Franck Sonata, they're always going to say César Franck Sinatra. Greek music.
Italian.
Bouzouki.
Mandolin.
Wrong. Nearly right.
And then a horse.
The horse. Gasp of fear.
And a baby at the end.
Yes. The title's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 words in it.
That's narrowed it down.
Yeah. Set in Italy, and it's one of the few novels in the world with the word tread in the title. And the word where.
And
where angels fear to tread.
Yes!
Oh, that old thing.
am now. Bzzz, I'm a fly, and now I'm a wall. Yes, I'm a fly on the wall. Let's tune into the fly's ears and listen to life as it really isn't. Fictional characters from different novels saying what they've always wanted to say to each other but never knew it. So, Roger, who have you got?
Yes, this is Mr. Ramsbottom, you know, that young Albert in Blackpool, remember him? Stanley Holloway, made famous. And meets Mr. Badger in the Wildwood. A right eerie place is the Wildwood, and humans should never intrude. But Mr. and Mrs. Ramsbottom strolled in with one of their brood.
Bold as brass they sauntered round, as if they owned the place, when suddenly young Albert went and vanished without a trace.
By gum, said Mum, it's deja vu. Bloody lions eating him again. Nay, said Dad, lions don't live in Lancashire as far as I can.
Just then they heard a commotion, a coming from an hole in the ground, a sort of singing and laughing, a warm and welcoming sound.
Then out popped a big furry badger, in paper hat and old dressing gown. Young Albert's life and soul at party. You're both welcome, so please come on down.
All the cast of the wind in the willows, Ratty and Moley and Toad, were having a reek good knees up as the wine and the whiskey flowed.
The reason for the big celebration was the change in the copyright laws, which meant brass would keep rolling in, hence the smiles and applause.
Young Albert took to the badger, and Mr. Badger took to young Al. Dad, I've had enough of cobbled streets. I'd rather stay here with me pal.
So Mr. and Mrs. Ramsbottom shed a tear and sadly agreed, but cheered up at sight of steak pies, thinking there's now only one mouth to feed. And now they're very sad, but ecologically sound. Last verse. And of young Albert now's been seen, or heard of since that day, that the wild wood was demolished to make space for a motorway.
Dilly, who's your dynamic duo?
Well, we have Mary Poppins meeting Violet Elizabeth Bott. And I'd like some whooshing sounds to suggest Mary arriving outside the front door. Crumbs!
Well, good morning. You must be Violet Elizabeth.
Yes, so?
I'm your new speech therapist.
Speech therapist?
Yes, yes.
I don't need a speech therapist.
Well, we'll see about that. Now, come along, Spitspot, let's get this bedroom spick and span. You're a bit of a messy Bessie, aren't you?
Messy Bessie, but my servants always sweep and scrub after me. My father is Stinkaroo. He's made pots and pots in the sauce business. Besides, I've got to go and play Indians with my friends, the Outlaws.
Outlaws?
Yes, so sucks to you.
Try saying sucks.
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 No, sucks.
That's what I said several times. Suck, suck, suck. You devil something.
Oh, I see this is going to be very difficult. Now, repeat after me. A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down.
A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down.
Right, try this one. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Well, I've heard some stupid things in my time, but this beats a lot. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And if you make me do any more beastly old speech therapy, I shall scream and scream until I'm sick. It's now time for some rather more adult games with my pals, William, Henry, Douglas and Ginger, and I'm certainly not going to miss out on them.
Adult games? Games? Dear, oh dear, this is playing havoc with my diction already.
Yes, I'm in love with William, who's the leader of the Outlaws.
Goodness gracious, aren't you a little young to be in love?
Why? How old do you think I am?
7 3/4.
7 3/4? What do you know? I'm actually 66. It's just the red ringlets and the sappy way I go when I do the splits that makes you think I'm so young. If my public want to go on believing I'm still a child star, who am I to disabuse them?
Goodness.
Didn't you realise I'm Britain's answer to Brooke Shields?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Well, I am, and I've been in show business for ever so long. In fact, I can pronounce my S's perfectly well if I so want to. Listen to this. The rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain. The hills are alive to the sound of music. See?
Crump.
So now, if you don't mind, please, would you hand me my stethoscope and my sensible shoes? I'm off to play doctors and nurses with William.
Right, Mark, spill the beans.
OK, this is a meeting with Dr. Faustus and Willy Wonka. And I'm Dr. Faustus. Roger's Willy Wonka. I can't believe this. I really cannot believe... I get all the worldly goods for a period of time. In exchange, I sell the devil my soul. Now, I knew he was the devil, I knew he was tricky, but I never thought for one moment he would stoop this low.
Dr. Faustus, the cameramen are rolling, the lights are set, everybody's waiting for you. Now, are you going to advertise my chocolate bar or not?
I did a deal with the devil for my soul, right? Just my immortal soul, not my complete and utter dignity.
Just get in the bath, eat the chocolate and say the lines. Go on. We got ballerinas in cream and naked mud wrestlers who depend upon your cue, so say the lines.
I can't do it.
Look, it's a health product.
I can't say them. I can recite the Lord's Prayer backwards. Hell, I can even recite Kipling's If backwards. And that really is blasphemy for the Daily Mail. But I can't do these lines.
Listen, I got advertising executives to write those lines, and ad men don't come cheap.
You paid somebody to write, "Go on, Mrs. Shove It in Your Mouth"?
Well, maybe pay is the wrong word. I got them from the same place I got you, the devil.
What did they do to deserve this?
They actually wanted to work in advertising. Surely even you can see that that cannot go unpunished.
And the punishment for wanting to be an advertising executive is to make them an advertising executive.
Ingenious, ain't it? Now, all you have to do is to say,
"Go on, Mrs. Shove It in Your Mouth."
Perfect. Thank you, Doctor. Now, if you want to see someone who's really paying it back, stick around. Okay, tell Danny Baker we're ready for him. You won't believe what this guy's done.
So, Miles, reveal all.
Well, I've been musing on an encounter between the wife of Bath, star of Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, and Jeeves, the Immaculate Valet from many a P.G. Woodhouse novel. And this is actually on the pilgrimage to Canterbury. So, Dilly, do you want to kick off?
There was a wife of Bath along with us, who of her husbands had made such a fuss that all of them had died before their time, exhausted by her loving in their prime. And now she rode unwed, though not alone, for trotting beside her on a dappled roan, there came a hired man, a sort of valet, with whom she seemed to be quite pally. She said to him, "Well, Jeeves, how do I look? Am I all right for Mr. Chaucer's book? And Miss Master Geoffrey bids me tell my story. Do you think I'll be looking hunky-dory?"
"Indeed, madam, I think you're fair to see, and so you should be, as you're groomed by me. There are some silver hairs upon your head, but then, of course, you have been 5 times wed. I find that marriage gives a lady heirs, but 5 past weddings just brings more grey hairs."
"5 weddings, then a funeral, you mean?"
"No, no, madam, for I have seldom seen a lady of such freshness in my life."
"You think I'm fresh? Oh, I'm not your wife."
"No, no. Dear lady, that's not what I meant. I had in mind the way you ride through Kent upon a horse, through rain and mud and wet, without a speck of dirt on your toilette."
"Oh, Jeeves, I love the way you talk in French. Did you perchance once court a Gallic wench?"
"Me? A wench? Madame, that's not my line. To books and culture I myself confine. I never think of girls or sex or wife. A valet does not have a private life."
"Oh, Jeeves."
The wife of Bath cried out in glee.
"You are the strangest man I e'er did see. Full many a suitor I have wooed and won, especially when the victim tried to run. For I do love the pleasure of the chase, but I see no pleasure in your face."
"The face is our least to be trusted part. I think you'll find there is no art to find the mind's construction in the face."
"I think I've heard that quote some other place."
"You may be right,"
said Jeeves.
"And now I think it's time for us to stop and eat and drink. Let's leave our horses on this hitching meter. Look, over there, I spy ye happy eater."
And so, continuing their endless banter, the two of them to Canterbury did canter.
And so onwards and upwards. All round Britain, people are contacting the booked office to talk to us about what they remember about certain books. It's like an urge spreading across the land. And we, you, are meeting that need. Makes you feel proud to be on a game show, doesn't it? But their urge needs to be met and sated. Sated by you, our panel. So, this is your chance to do something great for Britain for a change. Miles and Dilly, what's this one?
It actually brings to mind the scene whereby he was, I think he was sitting in some sort of bungalow surrounded by the most horrendous, nightmarish mess.
Spangly suits and Saturday nights.
Very frantic, very galloping, just like him, really.
Camels.
What does Hippies. It remind you of camels?
There's a camel in it.
Lots and lots of florally skirts and handmade shoes.
there's a scene on a beach with that awful woman who's pursuing him endlessly.
Strange name for a book, really.
I don't know any books with camels in them.
The Bible? What about the bit that says very frantic, just like him? Him being the author.
Oh.
In spangly suits. I think Mark and Roger might know.
Yeah. Go on.
Is it Stark by Ben Elton?
It is.
See, that will be your popular culture, would that be?
Well, living authors, I mean, it took me by surprise, totally.
Mark and Roger, try this one.
All of the tenses are represented.
There was a holy trinity.
There's been plays, obviously, there's been musicals, and there's even been a ballet.
The power of the boss over the individual.
Something happened in his past life when he was young, and he lost his love.
With a great contrast between the well-to-do and the poor.
It's actually a very humorous book.
Darkness was cheap, and this character liked it.
One day he sees the light and realises that he's a very sad and lonely man.
And it's a wonderful story.
Ah, there. This. We're going to see this on the telly very soon, this story, because it's your Christmas carol.
Yes, it is.
It is. Because it's your three tenses there, you see. The
ghosts past,
the
past.
Yeah.
Finally, as the closing moments of the game bring us to the final round of the last programme in this first series, it's time not only to stop the game, the squabbles, the lies and the cheating, but also the plot. Our teams have to say a line that will completely stop the plot of a book, such as James Joyce's Ulysses, Stephen Dedalus turned over and went back to sleep. Miles.
This is actually a play. Lady Windermere's Fan. Oh, well, I used to like her, but I'm not a fan of hers anymore.
You can turn, can't you?
Roger.
Now, how about the Communist Manifesto by Marx and Engels? Workers of the world, unite. Keep your heads down. Work your socks off. It's all right.
This stops the plot of What Katie Did. Who gives a damn?
This is to stop the plot of Pride and Prejudice. Mr. Bennet, send Darcy and Wickham away. The Reverend Moon will find wives and husbands for all of them.
Stopping the Kama Sutra. You don't expect me to wear one of those things, do you?
It applies to where I live. This is called The Deserted Village. Remember the poem by Oliver Goldsmith? Sweet Auburn, loveliest village of the plain. Heathrow opens its fifth terminal. Here comes a plane. And again, and again, and again, and again.
Any more?
Gone with the Wind. Fiddle-a-dee-paw. Of course slavery should be abolished.
Well, it's time to finish now, but... And I know you've all been waiting for this. We do have time for my favourite item, and yours, judging by the mailbag, the poem. Ending a Radio 4 programme with a poem is quite a revolutionary thing to do by Ian McMillan. Ending a Radio 4 programme with a poem is quite a revolutionary thing to do. But now, everybody does it. They even had a sonnet on the food programme the other day, but somebody ate it. So, it just remains for me to thank Mark Thomas, Roger McGough, Miles Kington and Dilly Keane. Researched by Mr. Goodall, devised and produced in Bristol by Mark Yobst, and presented by me, Sir Ian McMillan. Goodbye.